You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
And welcome in MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. I'm Dave Raymond, and this week, settle in as we learn about the Cincinnati Reds continuing the up and down. There was an announcer in the Central who was locked into his own booth. One team's youth is very mature. The Cardinals go off to this great start. Might be dealing with some issues of their own internally. All that and more on this week's edition of MLB.com Extra National League Central. Jen, I mean, the Cardinals 22-9. Last week we were talking about them getting off to the best, I think it was 25 or 26 game record in franchise history since the 1899 St. Louis Perfectos. And sure enough, they did. And here they are at 22-9. And fundamentally, I think from a distance, it looks like they're just running away with the Central Division. Is there any concern right now in the St. Louis clubhouse, or is it just, don't want to talk about it, knock on wood kind of thing, and just keep going about doing their business?
Well, I mean, I think to start with, if you were to ask this team a month ago if they would take it, going down to May 10th before they lose their first series of the season, I mean, absolutely, the Cardinals would have taken that in a heartbeat. So, it's mostly rosy here with the Cardinals. That being said, there are some issues that I think are going to have to be kept an eye on. I mean, certainly their starting pitching has fractured a little bit since Adam Wainwright went down. They're still looking for an answer there, not just in the fifth spot in the rotation, but also we've seen Carlos Martinez struggle now his last two times out. The bullpen, it remains in a little bit of flux. Jordan Walden, obviously, we know he's now going to be out into the summer, possibly until after the All-Star break, so who steps up into that eighth inning role is going to be a question the Cardinals are going to need to answer. And also, how is the usage? This is a bullpen that over the last 20 days has been used harder than any other bullpen in the major. So, at what point does that catch back up with them? And then I think on the offensive side, just dealing with some injuries. Matt Carpenter right now, he missed the series in Pittsburgh. We're not really sure how long he's going to be out, and certainly any absence of his is a big one for this team. John Jay dealing with a bruised thumb. So just some little nagging things here and there. But, you can't argue with the start that they've gotten off to. Certainly they would take. But again, not everything, I think, right now is necessarily as good as the record.
Okay, so they sense a little fallibility here and there. But, boy, oh, boy, things have gone awfully well for this team. And one of the things that I think you pointed out during the weekend, or maybe even before the weekend, was the power numbers. Last year, the Cardinals of 2014, it really was a remarkable story in the few three-run homers and multi-run homers that they hit all year. I mean, it's just not a home-run powered team for whatever reason, and yet had a lot of success. This year, at the very least, hitting with a little more authority, a little more power.
Yeah, we saw that come into play several times this week. I mean, you saw, earlier this week in Pittsburgh, a couple three-run homers win them a game. We saw last week against the Cubs, a grand slam gets them back into a game. A three-run homer gets them back into the game the day after that. So, last year when you looked at this offense, it was, I think the best way to describe the offense last year was labor-intensive. It oftentimes took three hits to score a run, and it just wasn't a recipe, that the Cardinals could follow with much success when, especially the year before, with the success they had with runners in scoring position. I don't think we noticed the power drought as much as we did in 2014. So, this year, you look at the lineup top to bottom, it shows the potential for more power. I think we've seen Colton Wong, Matt Carpenter in particular, two guys who, not necessarily power guys in the past, step up this year. We've seen a little more of the sneaky power from both of those. And then obviously with Matt Adams, Mark Reynolds, Matt Holliday, Johnny Peralta, guys who are proven 20, homer per season type guys, they're, top to bottom again. I think it's there. Do they have to rely on it? No. And I think one thing that we've noticed at Busch Stadium, I would say over the last couple of years, is it has kind of sapped the power of hitters that have come in there, and there's really not an explanation for that, whether it has to do with weather, whether it has to do with wind patterns, with the new construction in the outfield. There's a lot of theories going around, but it's just not been a home run friendly park for this team or any other team. That being said, we have seen a little bit more power. If you look at the numbers right now, Cardinals more in the middle of the pack, whereas obviously last year they finished last in the National League in that area.
Last week we were talking Cardinals after an incredibly intense weekend series against the Pirates, where they swept the series, won all the games in extra innings with walk-off victories. This week we're discussing the Cardinals again after a three-game weekend series, this time in Pittsburgh, and the Pirates took two of three. What was the sense? What was the feeling like in Pittsburgh? This is obviously a renewed franchise, and Cardinals have the target on their back, and the Pirates like to, you know, fancy themselves one of those teams who feel they can upset the apple cart. Was it pretty intense in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it was. You know, we got good crowds here at PNC Park all three nights. You know, I mean, it's no secret to the Pirates and to the Pirate fan base that to win the NL Central, you have to go through the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, they haven't been able to do that the last couple years. They'd like to consider themselves, just as much in the NL Central race as the Cardinals this year, though certainly the way the Cardinals have started, they kind of buried everybody else at this point. I think the Pirates also realize that the NL Central is probably only going to get better with the Cubs getting better, so perhaps this would be the year if you try to sneak in a division title, perhaps before the Cubs are ready to do so. This might be the chance. So these are always fun series. It's been fun to kind of watch the Cardinals-Pirates rivalry grow the last 3 years. And again, that just has to do with the fact that the Cardinals and Pirates have been the two teams down to the wire for that NL Central division. This year, I still think the Pirates are going to be there toward the end. And I know they haven't gotten off to the start that they would certainly have liked to. And you know, as we talk about some of the Cardinals' issues, the Pirates certainly have their own issues as well. But with these two teams still having 13 more games scheduled against one another, with several of those coming late in the year, I think it's going to be fun. And as somebody who covered the Pirates several years ago when things weren't as good, I always enjoy coming back to PNC Park and seeing that place packed.
You know what? I'm glad you bring that up because, to me, it really is one of the fantastic venues, not just in the National League, but in baseball. When the fans are there, you know, when the games matter, I feel like that is really a special place for baseball.
It is, you know, and it was unfortunate. I was here from 2007 to 2011, so most of that was pretty black times, for Pirate fans. And if oftentimes the only good crowds they had were for fireworks nights or concerts or this and that. But to see the fans now come out for baseball is a lot of fun. And, you know, you always knew that core of fans was here. They were just craving for a reason to come out to the park. And over the last few years, the Pirates have given it to them.
Yeah. Sky Blast, right, where they shoot the fireworks off the building.
That's right.
Oh, man, that's good times. Cardinals bullpen, and, you know, every team wrestles with these decisions at various junctures of the season. You know, how many arms to carry in the bullpen? Maybe do you need an extra guy on the bench? And, you know, we talk about the rotation with Wainwright out. Is this just going to be a state of flux all year, the way they manipulate the bullpen, the rotation, and try to man all those positions?
Yeah, I think it's going to be. You know, I get a lot of questions from fans about, who are the five guys for the rotation or the seven guys for the bullpen. It's not like that. I think there's going to be a lot of up and down. We've seen already how aggressive Mike Matheny has been this year with his bullpen usage, but what comes with that is the potential for overusage. So I think, you know, one of the ways the Cardinals are going to try to handle that is to be very aggressive in making roster moves and bringing guys up from AAA and sending them down when they need a break. Certainly, they don't want to wear down this bullpen to where it's ineffective in September and as the club hopes, you know, when they're playing in October. So it's going to be the same for the rotation. I think the biggest question for the rotation is where are those innings going to come from with Adam Wainwright gone? I know we've talked about this before, but when you lose a starter who's projected to easily give you 200, 220, 230 innings, where do you make those up? And you don't necessarily just make those up with a fill-in fifth starter. You make those up by having Jaime Garcia and Marco Gonzalez and Tyler Lyons kind of all factor into that at some point this year. Whether or not the Cardinals go to a modified six-man rotation, that's not off the table. And in terms of the bullpen, what we've seen right now is for the last 2 weeks, this is a team that's carried eight or nine relievers on any given day. So we've seen them cut back on their bench in order to fortify the bullpen. And I wouldn't be surprised if it stays that way for a little bit longer again, especially if Mike Matheny's going to be aggressive in how he deploys those relievers. He knows he needs to have more of them.
Well, you know, we started this thing talking about the great start, the great record for St. Louis, and yet they're not real satisfied or tickled with, all the aspects of the team at the moment. But this is a big stretch. 12 of 15 games on the road, including road series against the Mets and the Royals coming up. So this is a pretty critical stretch for this team.
It is. Yeah, their schedule definitely gets tougher, and you do look at the way that they started. I mean, they have started 14-3 at home, so certainly their schedule did them some favors and putting a lot of home games up at the top. So, yeah, it's going to be a test for them on the road. It's going to be a test against some better teams. They are now getting out of the division, really, for the first long stretch of the year. And, you know, even look ahead into June, you have an early series against the Brewers. You have the Dodgers, you know, the Rockies. So this will be it'll be a great test, especially, again, for a team that is fracturing in some areas. Can they hold it together? I know today's off day was welcomed by everybody involved. And this is a club that just got done playing 20 games in 20 days and certainly tired from that. Well, now they've got another 16 straight games, days of games straight ahead. So, you know, I think once they get through this stretch, it eases a little bit for this club, but it will certainly, it seems like it'd be an opportunity for some of the other teams in NL Central to gain some ground, but certainly the Cardinals hope that they can weather this pretty well.
Yeah, well, an off day that's no doubt welcomed by beat writer as well. Jen, thanks for your time today. Appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, Dave.
Carrie, the Cubs at 500, 15 and 15. And maybe the big news this week, though, was that, you know, at long last, it happened. We saw the home run by Chris Bryant in Milwaukee. And I'm sure, even though we all know he's going to hit plenty of home runs, I'm sure it was a relief just to get it over with.
Yeah, I got the sense from Chris that even though he said all along that he doesn't have to hit a home run, you kind of got the sense that it is a little bit of a weight off his shoulders, and he can now relax. To be honest, the best play in that Milwaukee series was when he beat out an infield a throw in the infield and got an infield single that led to a run scoring. That was on Friday, the first game of the series, and that was the most impressive thing. I mean, not many people his size have the kind of speed that he has. But, no, the home run is what the fans have been waiting for. Now he's got to christen the new bleachers at Wrigley Field with a home run, and then everybody will be happy.
Yeah, we can all move on and just let him have a great career.
Correct.
But it's funny you mention
Correct.
That about the infield hit. I was really hoping to see him during spring training, but he didn't travel during the Cubs game that I did, and I didn't get that chance. But we talked so much about his power and what he did during spring training. Everybody knows he's going to be an exciting player that way. And yet the conversations you and I have had in these first few weeks have been about infield hits, taking walks, finding ways on base, making defensive plays. It's just doing the small things. And I'm just kind of wondering, as you've had a chance to watch him, how do you think people will remember Chris Bryant when it's all said and done? Will he be that just a flat-out winner kind of guy who did everything, or will his big power numbers one day ultimately overshadow all the other things?
It's early May, and he's just getting started. So I'm not real good on those projection kind of things. I just think people need to wait. I would tend to think that he will be more known for his home runs than he will be for his infield singles when all is said and done. But he's just getting started. And I don't after seeing the numbers he put up in the minor leagues, I have no doubt that he'll put up, you know, 20, 30 home runs here easily in the major leagues. The problem is he just really has to get used to the pitching here. That's the biggest thing is what are they doing to him? Maybe not try and, you know, outguess the pitchers as much as he is. I mean, he's really got to get adjusted to that first and then go from there.
Let me ask you, though, somebody who watches him closely on a daily basis, right? And you no doubt see the game differently than the average fan, whether it's just because of access to all the different players and Brian himself. What do you see? I mean, what impresses you about him?
The thing from the very beginning is just how mature he is for a player, for a person his age. I mean, I remember his age. I couldn't handle some of the stuff that's been thrown at him. He's handled it all very, very calmly. We like to joke that people stay in their lane. He stays in his lane. He doesn't believe the hype at all. He's not walking around the clubhouse, you know, look at me kind of thing. In fact, lately it's been kind of hard to find him in the clubhouse. He's been sort of hiding a little bit. And I think he's trying so hard to be just one of the guys. And yet there's just all these expectations placed on him, fair or unfair. And he's trying to downplay it as much as he can. I really like the kid. I've met his parents. His father is just so gregarious, and his mother is just the opposite. And somehow Chris has come out as a nice. I think he's more like his mom, where he's a lot quieter that way. It's just really going to be fun to watch him develop and mature in the big leagues.
Another young guy on the team who is, you know, also busy maturing and whatnot is Addison Russell, batting ninth. It seems to agree with him, batting ninth, at least it has recently. And I guess his manager kind of likes that spot for him as well, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, Joe likes to talk about the number nine spot as being kind of a place for a leadoff hitter in training. And Addison is getting is in a really good place. There's minimal pressure on him right there. You have to remember, he's only 21. He's the youngest player in the National League. And for him to have I think it went 12-game hit streak, pretty impressive. It's been home runs. He got a home run before Bryant did, which we all thought was pretty funny. Singles, he's doing little things. He's come through in the clutch. He's also another one that's really mature. I just think fans should watch him play defense. It's just a beautiful thing to watch him in the field. That's what impresses me the most about him.
And he doesn't seem to have any issues at all batting ninth, right? It's not like there's a pride issue or anything with him.
No, there's nothing at all. I think right now he's very happy to be here. So.
Yeah, that's pretty cool when you can get a group together like they have right now in Chicago. What about Soler's mental mechanics? We talked about those last week. How's that coming along?
I think it's still time. I can sense that Cub fans are a little impatient with these guys. Again, it's just a matter of let's see what they see, let them get used to the pitching, let them try and not outsmart anybody. He's doing fine. They're all doing fine. The biggest problem right now is the strikeouts. The whole team is striking out at kind of an alarming rate. They were first in the majors to get to 300 as a team. They're on pace to top last year's numbers with strikeouts, and strikeouts. They're seeing a lot of pitches, and they're having good approaches, but strikeouts. There's nothing positive to come out of that. So, I think right now that's been kind of the most glaring thing with not just the young kids but all the hitters.
Is there any acknowledgement that in a program where you're trying to see more pitches, and they have done a great job of that, and I know that is a point of emphasis to have good extended at bats, see as many pitches as possible. There has to be some acknowledgement, right, that the strikeout numbers are going to increase with that approach, right? I mean, that's just a natural byproduct, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to happen, but I guess it'd just be nice if they weren't hitting double digits every night, that's all.
Well, I guess that's a point well taken. On the pitching side of things, I don't know if we have time to get into David Ross's excellent work this week.
Yes, he did a fine job, yes.
Yeah, right? It's always fun. It's always disappointing because it comes in a game that's kind of a blowout, and at the same time, those things are always kind of, a lot of fun.
I'm sure he went off and went into the dugout and told everybody, hey, this is easy, because it was just 1-2-3 for him. But I don't – I'm guessing that maybe he didn't do that. But no, it's an unfortunate thing to happen, but on the other hand, it sort of makes the guys forget that they're getting beat 12-4, and so they can sort of go from there. Let's hope David doesn't get another inning in the season.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there'd be plenty who would echo that sentiment. One guy that they were hoping would get a lot of innings this year and pitch real well is John Lester, and he's got the Mets right coming up, and I don't know what's the feeling so far. I mean, I know May's been a little bit different month for him, a little bit better than April was.
What's funny is that Lester's the only guy that's been winning actually in May, which is maybe not a good thing. They just finished up a tough stretch against NL Central teams that did not do very well. And I think now they've got to face the Mets for four games at Wrigley Field. And the Mets have, I think, the best pitching going on right now in the National League. So that's going to be a little bit of a test. And hate to see the strikeout numbers go up again. Lester seems a lot more comfortable, seems to be in a better rhythm now, seems to be at ease. It's just a matter of time with him. I just think what they really need is for him to go deep. The bullpen is gassed, and the bullpen is really taken a hit in these last few games, and so that's something that really needs to be corrected.
Gosh, yeah, it's so early for that kind of thing, too. I mean, that's tough on the team. But all right, Kerry.
Well, they've been kind of going in streaks. You know, they were real good for a stretch, and then they went then down and then up and down, and they just could really use a nice stretch where the starters go deep and the bullpen can just sort of take a breather.
Yeah, no, he's got the hot hand too, so we'll see how it goes. Well, Kerry, always appreciate it, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week. And Tom, last week when we got together to talk all things Pirates, they were coming off, I mean, one of those just horribly disappointing weekends, right? Three tough losses in St. Louis, all extra innings, all walk-off a ride. And this last weekend, got a chance to see that same St. Louis team, but in Pittsburgh, had great crowds and took two of three. Tell us a little bit about the atmosphere, both at the ballpark and then what's the mood and the thought like inside that clubhouse during that kind of a series?
Well, the atmosphere was pretty electric. Two of the three games were sellouts. The third game had a crowd in the 30s as well. It was a big weekend for the Pirates. It's a little too early to say they salvaged their season. But, if St. Louis had taken it to them again three straight, they would have fallen 11 games behind. 11 behind on Mother's Day is not a very good scenario. By taking the last two games, they said goodbye to the Cardinals, 7 behind them. And you could definitely see all of the chins being a lot higher in the Pirates clubhouse. You know, they're kind of reluctant to call really any game crucials, particularly in early May. But they face this totally different story. It was a big weekend for them to kind of regain their strut and going forward. And obviously, you know, the bats came awake. And going forward, there's every belief that they're hitting a stride.
Yeah, you know, the bats coming awake at home. And we've talked about this before. It's not as if PNC Park is a great hitter's park. So to see some good offensive numbers at home, always nice. And then to do it against a team like St. Louis with their vaunted pitching, it's kind of a double whammy, I guess, in terms of maybe a confidence lifter.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I asked Hurdle going into this series why there's such a disparity between how they played the Cards in St. Louis and in Pittsburgh. But the records are virtually reversed the last 2.5 years. 15-3 in St. Louis, and after this weekend, they're 15-6 in PNC Park against the Cardinals. For whatever reason, Clint wouldn't address that, but it's obvious. The crowd has a lot to do with it. You know, they do act as a 10th man when the Pirates are at home. There's no question about it, although that may be a bit of a cliche. They do respond to the crowd's urging, and basically, the Pirates are built for PNC Park in a sense of having the speedy outfield and pitching strong. But, St. Louis, until Mark McGwire got there, to be honest, wasn't known as the hitter's park either. He kind of shrunk it down in size. So I think it has a lot to do with being at home and being comfortable and being more confident.
So they play a little bit better at home, get things going, and now, boom, right back out on the road. And they go to Philadelphia, 4 games there. And, look, you never like to spend a whole lot of time on the road, but sometimes there are teams that are vulnerable, and the Phillies are a team. Although, is there something about the rivalry between the Phillies and the Pirates that as we like to say, you throw all the numbers out at this point? Or is there still that same kind of tension?
Not at all. I mean, historically, when they were both in the old National League East, that and the interstate rivalry was a lot stronger. Now they play pretty frequently. So, I don't think there's a sense of the rivalry. You know, the big thing on the road, in my perception, is momentum is a lot bigger on the road. If you get off to a good start, it's easier to keep it rolling. If you get off to a bad start, it's a tough place to recover. The Phillies are down. Obviously, it's a transition season for them. Everybody expects the Pirates to take at least 3 out of 4. And high expectations is something else that can backfire. But we'll see how it goes.
So what about Jung-ho Jung and his contributions lately off the bench? The kid from South Korea has had a couple of – it seems to me like he's come up with some big spots early in the season. You know, he's only played in – I don't know, 20 games, and maybe only has about 50 at-bats, but it seems like he's come up with some big hits.
Yes, he has, and he's definitely getting more and more playing time. He started probably the last 8 games, I believe. I don't want to use the word controversy, but it's going to be a sensitive situation for the Hurdle. He admits he likes riding the hot bat, and you know, the way Gong has been playing, he's hit over 500 in those 5 starts. Somebody may have to take a seat for a while, either Joey Mercer or Josh Harrison, because you can't have two guys playing short or third. So it's a developing situation, definitely one worth watching. But Kong definitely looks a lot more comfortable. His power is definitely coming through. And, you know, we'll have to see how it plays out in the next couple of weeks.
What about McCutchen? You know, I know I feel like it's a topic we circle back to every now and again, but, you know, the average still, you know, what, a little over 220 for the year. You know, at what point do you get concerned?
Well, you don't get concerned at all. You know, oddly enough, but Monday he finally vented his frustrations openly, and ever since then, Tuesday he vented his frustrations, and ever since then, he said nothing but light drives. He looked like his old self. I don't know if that, you know, opening up about how frustrated he was with the way things have been going, if that had anything to do with it. But ever since then, he's looked like his old self, both offensively, defensively, and on the base side.
Well, you know, changing our direction just a smidge to pitching. You wrote a piece on Mark Melancon the other day, and I got to see Mark when he was coming up with the Astros, a really, really good kid, good young man. Tell us a little bit about Mark Melancon and what he's been able to contribute for the Pirates.
He is a very solid individual. He's been on a roll, 5 straight saves, 8 straight really good outings, several of them not in chase situations. And now that he's going good, he's kind of revealing some of the frustration he felt. Not because of the way he was pitching early in the season, but the way people reacted to it. On the short term, they were questioning his stuff, whether he should remain, how long his rope is as a closer. At the time, he didn't react to it, but he kind of revealed that he's a little bit frustrated, on the verge of angry about it. But he says it in a very even tone. He's a very solid individual, and he alluded to the fact that he's had bad times in the past, so he knows how to rebound. And he's just doing it again.
That's funny you say that, because he doesn't have the countenance of a real fierce guy, right? He's just a very pleasant young man. But when you do talk to him, you can sense it. You can get a little bit of that smoldering competitive beast under there sometimes, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. He's on the outside, he doesn't seem to have the classic demeanor for a closer, you know, fiery and animated. But inside, you know, he's turning 110 miles an hour. But you know what? That attitude serves him well. He doesn't get rattled when things are going bad within a game, or, you know, after he's had a bad outing, he can go out the next day and you know, turn the page. And his even keel enables him to do that. He's very good at what he does. And he's very confident in being able to do it, even after the occasional hiccup.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. The other story that I get a big kick out of right now is, you know, AJ Burnett at 38 years old, still absolutely dealing.
Well, dealing better than ever. He actually got upset when it was pointed out to him the other day that he was on the best extended run of his entire career as far as consecutive starts, like giving up more than one run. And he kind of got upset. He thought I might hex him. But then he went right out again and did it again. He gave up two runs, but, I mean, you know, two runs in seven innings is an outstanding effort. So not only is he pitching well for a 38-year-old, but it's a really remarkable development. He's pitching better than he's ever has. Differently, doesn't punch out people like he did when he was in his 20s. But as far as the results, he's never been as good.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. I'm glad you didn't hex him. You don't want him mad at you.
He was just getting mad. I was hoping he doesn't have the bad eye on him because I would have been a dead man.
Yeah, you were. This is now, man. All right, Tom, stay out of harm's way, man. And as always, we appreciate you hanging out a little bit and give us some insight on the Pirates.
My pleasure, guys. See you, Dave.
Adam, last week we were talking about Craig Counsell. He was thinking maybe he would be a better manager than he was a player. And doggone it, the guy's a winning record in his first week. I guess he might not have been too far off, huh?
Well, yeah, I think the players probably had something to do with it, too. And you know, those guys have been playing better lately. The pitching has kept them in a lot more games. Some of the hitters are coming around a little bit. Chris Davis in particular, who's pretty important as a source of power, had a big series against the Cubs after a really long cold spell. And there's good signs from guys like Ryan Braun, too, who's starting to hit the ball hard. And sooner or later, you think some of his counting numbers are going to start to go up. So there's encouraging signs. And, I mean, the guys so far like playing for Craig Counsell. There haven't been huge changes, you know. There's been no giant lineup reconstruction. There's been no changes to the pitching staff. It's been kind of business as usual, but, you know, maybe a little refocus after a manager gets let go, which often happens, and the team is, you know, has continued really to play better baseball.
Yeah, you mentioned the guys like playing for him, and I'm sure they probably like playing for Ron Renick. There's plenty of guys just like playing in the big leagues, but what has been the general feedback from guys in the clubhouse?
You know, the feedback has been really what Counsell himself has talked about in his media sessions. You know, their focus is winning games. And he hammered that home hard, I think, on the day that this change happened. He's asking them for focus every night. And that sounds simple for guys who are making a lot of money to do this job. But it's a challenge. I mean, 162 games to bring that same level of focus every day. It does take concentration, and it does take a reminder every now and then from the manager. And I, from what I hear from players, he forcefully drove that point home in his opening address to them that, you know, he's going to have high expectations, and he's not written off this season, and he doesn't want them to either. So those are some of the broad issues that he's brought up and that I think are important to him as a manager. He talks a lot about execution. I think he has a great understanding of how difficult this game is. You know, Ron Renick was the same way in that, a guy who played a lot of games off the bench. And, you know, Counsell at the same time is kind of learning on the job how to manage. And he said he likes some new situations come up because it's something new to talk about with his bench coach, Jerry Nairn, who has a lot of experience. And he's kind of learning on the job, too. So there's still a feeling out period, I think, going on, and I think that's to be expected when you bring in a new manager who doesn't have a long track record.
Of course, coming home for 10 days, that helps. You mentioned Braun, you know, swinging it with a little more authority and consistency these days, and that, you know, you can't overlook the importance of that. And he's a big, big man in the middle of that lineup. You get a sense, though, that that's making a pretty big difference up and down the lineup?
Well, yeah, but, you know, he hasn't really seen the success yet. But I had was able to have a conversation with him about some of the numbers that were brought to his attention. And, you know, he has one of the best hard-hit ball rates of his career. He has an extremely low batting average on balls in play. And the way he put it is that combination, it's illogical, and it can't continue. So eventually, in his view, some of these hits are going to start to fall, and he feels like there's a hot streak coming for him. And the other guy I mentioned, Chris Davis, you know, this is a team built to hit for power, to hit doubles and to hit home runs. And they didn't do that early. Braun is one, and Chris Davis is another guy, as I said, who's really important. He was in a long funk, you know, 6 for 49, I think it was, and he just had a couple of big games in a row, and he's one of those streaky hitters, and the Brewers hope to get him on a hot streak and ride him out a little bit. So, you know, one by one, you can kind of look up and down the team and see some positive things happen for different players. And, Dave, this is what we talked about last week when Craig Counsell took over, that they were playing at a level that was unsustainably low just based on the track record of the players that we're talking about. We're not talking about Chris Bryant, Nathan Russell types who have zero major league track record. We're mostly talking about guys who've had success at this level and were performing way under that level. So some of that has started to come up slowly. It's, you know, who knows whether it's too late to save this season. Logically, it probably is. It's really hard to climb out of a 12 games under hole. They're 10 games under as we speak right now. But there's positive things happening. And if they can get guys back on the field and performing, it makes some of the decisions ahead at least a little easier in terms of you do get in a position where you got to look more for the long term of the organization. You at least want your pieces there and healthy. That's one thing they haven't had so far, but they're getting closer.
How's Jonathan Lucroy doing? You had a chance to chat him up recently?
Yeah, positive steps. He started in the last few days taking batting practice on the field. That's another big step. And, you know, with this injury, it's just a matter of, as Craig Counsell put it, checking days off the calendar. There's no way to speed this up. There's no great treatment that you can give a guy when he has a broken bone. You just have to wait for that bone to heal. And, again, the nature of this particular break, it's not a pain tolerance thing where as soon as he can tolerate the pain, he can play. This one needs to actually heal. So they had last week an x-ray that showed good progress in that direction. But we're still talking, 2 weeks plus. He does hope to come in short of the six-week, sort of the long end of the spectrum they gave him for recovery. So, he's two, three weeks-ish away from playing. And then he's going to be important because he's a guy who is just, a difference maker in terms of offense from behind the plate. And they've certainly missed, as they've tried to begin to dig out of this hole, missed what Lucroy, has the potential to bring.
One guy they haven't missed his productivity is Adam Lind. I mean, he continues to sort of churn along, hitting near 320 on base, better than 400. And, boy, has he been a godsend this year.
Yeah, it's what's interesting is when you listen to Doug Melvin talk about his frustration of what's happened this season, they spent a lot of time and energy looking over the winter at what needed to be done in the wake of last year's collapse at the end, what needed to be done to fix it. And they came to the conclusion that they had good players, a good offensive team that went through a bad slump, and they looked in the offseason for three things to happen, and they thought this would make them a contender. And those were Gene Segura having a bounce back at shortstop, because when he's right, he's a plus there offensively compared to the other shortstops in the league. They looked to add Adam Lind and get more production at first base, where they've been last or next to last in the league in OPS for a couple of years running now. And they looked for Jimmy Nelson to step up in the starting rotation after they traded Yovani Gallardo. Those three things in spring training they talked about a lot, and they thought if that happened, they'd be a good team. Well, those three things all have gone right, and yet they started with the worst record in baseball. And that's what's made this, I think, so maddening for Doug Melvin. And that's one of the things that contributed to the managerial changes. They felt like this team should be better than what it was performing. So that's a real roundabout way for me to say that, Adam Lind has been exactly what they wanted. They've kept him healthy so far. He's been notably extremely good against left-handed pitching, and I think he's going to continue to play. When they face a really, really top, Chris Sale in the series, we'll see what they do. But when they face these top guys, they may rest Lind and play another guy there. But he's going to play against a lot of left-handers because he's hitting them. And that's been it has that is one area where the Brewers can't complain. They've gotten everything they hoped for and more so far out of Adam Lind.
Well, I guess the last thing to worry about then is making sure that Bob Uecker has access to his booth and get out and in. Has that all been taken care of?
That was wild, wasn't it? I mean, they're setting up a ladder, guys climbing up into the booth to take the door off the hinges and let him out. Yeah, he's fine. I guess you chalk it up to the list of things that have gone wrong for this poor team this season is their Hall of Fame radio broadcaster getting locked in the booth. As you can imagine, though, Dave, he had a good sense of humor about the whole thing, and I was not on that, listening to that broadcast because I was covering the game myself, but I heard it was a pretty good show. The fans were getting play-by-play on the field for the Brewers and in the radio booth as they tried to rescue their longtime broadcaster.
He's a beaut. You know, you say it's one of the list of things for this year's team, but really, that's straight you, man. I mean, that could only happen to one guy right there.
Yeah, well, his radio partner, too, I guess, was pretty funny about it. I asked Joe Block whether he'd ever been locked in a radio booth before. He said, no, but they tried to lock me out. So I think his sense of humor is nicely rubbing off on our friend Joe Block.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Adam, thanks, as always, for the time. Look forward to it again next week.
All right, see ya.
Mark, it's like I feel like we've done this podcast before. Here we are talking about the Cincinnati Reds team. A game under 500, sort of the same spot they are every week. But was this a good week for them? They come back from a long road trip, basically having played 500.
Yeah, I mean it wasn't a great week. It wasn't a bad week. Obviously, there were some places where they could have done better, and certainly Sunday, losing a game in the ninth inning with Aroldis Chapman on the mound isn't something that normally happens. They had a chance at a 6-4 road trip. They had to settle for 5-5. They split a doubleheader on Saturday, so the 500 seems to be carrying throughout. But the road trip is sort of a microcosm of what they've been going through all year. They take a couple steps forward and a couple steps back and kind of end up even where they are. So they definitely have some work to do. There's some bright spots, and there, of course, are some concerns.
Yeah. And again, you know, it just sort of echoes what we've been saying. You know, I was looking at some of the overall numbers and start taking a look at the offensive numbers and then the overall pitching numbers. They would both indicate about the same thing. You know, almost 500, not quite average, not just a smidge below average in a lot of ways. Or right at it. Is that basically the way you see it? Has there been, a part of the game for the Reds that has held them back? Or are they just basically playing about average in pretty much all aspects?
Well, I mean, the bullpen's been their Achilles heel throughout the year. But, I mean, the other issue, which is kind of part and parcel with the bullpen, is that they've been getting some shorter starts from their less experienced guys like Michael Lorenzen, on Sunday going five innings, Anthony DeSclafani going five innings, and then having to leave four innings for a bullpen to cover is asking a lot right now, especially those middle innings before they get to Chapman. It's been a recipe for defeat sometimes. They finally have seemed to settle in on some eighth inning setup guys and Tony Cingrani and Jumbo Diaz. And he didn't have a great outing on Sunday, but he's had some pretty nice outings going leading into this, this conversation. So I think they feel pretty good about that. And, offensively, they've got some guys that have finally heated up. Marlon Byrd's really comes to mind. He's been really hot. Zach Cozart, despite missing three games, got really hot and is hitting well. But then on the other hand, you have Billy Hamilton, who hasn't really gotten going. He's just hitting above 200 at the leadoff spot, which isn't acceptable. Jay Bruce hasn't caught fire yet. He's been struggling. So there's some things to work out on both sides of the game.
Votto suspended for bumping an umpire. It serves just the one game. Comes back and delivers a big hit, but in a loss. Maybe the other recurring theme for me, Mark, this year with Cincinnati has been just this testiness. Not that that's a bad thing, right? I mean, I think you could argue sometimes that having a little chip on the shoulder, a little edge, can be good, but I mean, when I go back to like week one and benches are clearing and managers getting ejected and Votto now bumping umpires, it's like, what is going on with the tension in Cincinnati?
I don't think the benches are cleared yet this season that I remember, but I do, obviously Price got into it a little bit with the umpires and got ejected and of course what happened with Votto. I don't know if anything's going on. I don't think this is a testy team. Say Brian Price has been a little testy going back to spring training about a few things. I mean, he definitely it's a team, I guess if I had to say what it is, it's a team that is under a lot of pressure. Despite the outside of the organization dismissing this team as being someone that's not going to contend, this team does expect to contend. And I can guarantee for you its owner expects it to contend. So anything short of that is going to dial up the pressure a little bit. The Cardinals obviously are off to an unbelievable start, and they are in the process of leaving the rest of the division behind. So that's not good. But the Reds are still in the wild card hunt, and it's so early. There's 130-plus games left, so this is not time to start, you know, giving up on the division and looking at the wild card. A lot of things can happen. But there is some pressure for the team to do well. And as far as Votto is concerned, I think it was just a misunderstanding, if anything else, with the umpire. It seemed like he was having a beef with Garrett Cole. The umpire thought it was about him, and when Votto's back was turned, he was ejected, and then he found out when he was getting ready to take position. So I think it's the surprise of it all with that, and obviously he should never have bumped the umpire. He was very contrite afterwards and apologized for it immediately, so maybe that helped him only get a one-game suspension. It has been an interesting season in some ways with some of the extra stuff going on.
Yeah, for as early as it is, I guess maybe benches clearing might have been overstating a little bit. I'm thinking of that little run with the Cardinals in that first weekend of the season, some questionable slides and those types of things. But Mesoraco back, that has been one of the big mysteries of this first month plus of the season. But I suppose at least there's some relief just to have that episode behind and have him back in uniform and available.
Well, it is and it isn't. It's kind of a positive and a negative. They were able to utilize him in American League ballpark as a DH, but they still haven't solved his issues as a catcher. He can't catch. And now that they're going back to some National League rules for this week, he's back to being a pinch hitter, and that's really all he can do. And, you know, he wasn't very happy. I talked to him on Saturday after the doubleheader, and he went over 4 and didn't have a very good game, and he was pretty hot. You know, he wants to be more of a contributor, and I think on Sunday he was able to do that. He got 2 hits, including a triple. And the one positive I did see is that when he ran all the way, the ball off the wall, and he hustled in for a three-bagger, and he didn't seem to be limping. So for that, it's good. It's the problem of catching. He can't – the rotation that his leg takes when he has to squat and get up and down is what causes the problem, not swinging a bat and not running. So there's still some decisions to be made. Eventually, he very well likely will need surgery. Why they haven't gone that route yet, I honestly don't know. They are trying to exhaust all the other avenues of treatment. But I have to think that after this next wave of interleague play, which is coming up the following week when they go to Kansas City and Cleveland, after that, I think we might at least get a decision one way or the other what they're going to do with them.
Yeah, that's a tough spot. That's a really tough spot. And Pena, at the very least, Pena's been carrying his weight with the bat. I mean, seems as if he's been as productive as you could expect a guy to be.
Yes, he's been very good lately. Really, he's been good every chance he's gotten in the lineup, but especially since he's picked up from Mesoraco, I think the last 15 games or so, he's done really well. He's got hit to like in all but 2 of them, and he's looked very good, and he's always been worked well with the pitching staff, especially with Cueto, and they seem to form a good combination. So to that extent, they would obviously love to have Mesoraco back in the lineup and Pena play a couple days a week, but right now they'll take what they can get from Pena and Tucker Barnhart as well. They like him, and they feel like he's part of the future.
What about Marlon Byrd? I know we keep saying, you know, he's got to produce a little bit more. I mean, he has been better, but
a lot better.
Yeah, still though. I mean, the signing, I don't know. I mean, I guess there's still plenty of time for a guy to come around and show his numbers. Is there a sense, though, that they're going to get from Marlon Byrd what they had hoped, what they expected? You know, we're talking about a guy, 37 years old?
Well, I mean, based on the last week or so, he's been very good. I think he's got 5 homers in the week, and it's funny, he went from a guy who had 0 walks, I think, the first month of the season, and now he's got 10. He's been doing much better at getting on base. They've moved him to the second spot for the time being just to because of all the lineup situations they have and some guys aren't playing well or hurt. So he's done well in the second spot, and him hitting well is definitely a positive. It hasn't translated into getting above the .500 hump, but it's he's doing his part. I think they're seeing more of what they expected from him. He's made some nice contributions.
Will they keep him there at the two spot? You know, when a guy starts picking things up, you know, when moved in a lineup, sometimes the manager just wants to keep a guy there. You think they'll leave him at two for a while?
I would say it's more of a fluid situation. Price likes the lineup the way it is at the moment, just because it seemed to be working, and he was hitting well there, so he wanted to stick with it. But he also acknowledged that if he's starting to hit some more home runs and be a more of a run producer, he would like to probably get him down towards the middle of the order where he was. So I think right now it's like a temporary thing. Maybe they might move Zach Cozart back to the two spot now that he's back from his wrist injury, or eventually, if they could get the lineup they really want, they'd have Joey Votto hitting second and Todd Frazier third. But right now they're kind of just mixing and matching and trying to get through this little phase right now without Mesoraco and things like that.
Yeah, well, I guess when you start considering all the things going on and that they're dealing with, maybe a game under 500 isn't so bad, even though St. Louis continues to run away with the division. Mark, great stuff, man. Appreciate it. We'll do it again next week. Well, there you have it. Another busy week in the National League Central. We thank you for joining us. MLB.com Extras National League Central Edition.